the Spot Track Podcast, talking sports contracts, the salary cap, and business of sports.
Welcome into the latest edition of the Spot Track Podcast. Brandon Kravitz here, along with the money man himself, Mike Jannetty. It is draft day in the NFL. The buzz is in the air. One of my favorite days of the year. Mike, where does this land for you in terms of the sports calendar? It's definitely the best non-sporting event, but
you know, yeah, that's fair.
Depends on your view of where we are today.
It's a hell of a show, and they do a really good job of keeping it, a nice television show. Unfortunately, I kind of live on Twitter with it most of the time because I'm trying to get the data in as quickly as possible. But I will say this too. It's the run up to Sunday and Monday, which is maybe the most hectic 48 hours in the Spot Track calendar, which is UDFA season. There are so many reports left and right, up and down. A lot of them end up being wrong. Guys change teams 7 times because agents are posturing out loud, right? Like I'm trying to get an extra $10,000 or $20,000 for their players. It's a real, real, real circus. So the formulaic 257 picks that happen over the next 3 days are nice and kind of, you know, chill for me. And then it's just absolute chaos for the rest of the weekend. So it is what it is. And then, oh, by the way, rosters get to 90 players, and then I have to deal with 40 of them getting cut over the next 6 weeks. So a lot of work, all for naught, unfortunately. But that's the nature of this beast. There's really no other league like this. What other league allows you to basically double your roster for 6 months, and then it's all going to get crumbling, cut down by September 1st, so that we can get this thing rolling? It's really unique in that regard. You know what I mean?
And the amount of bodies that you can bring in that you didn't draft, you know, and some of these guys make real impacts too. If you see that in other sports, you'd be like, you know, you can kind of ignore it if that were even a thing, because, you know,
most, if you're not a top actually hit, call them camp bodies. Like the NFL will say that every now and then when they know, oh, this guy's never making this roster. But for the most part, you're going to see like every team sign 5 UDFA running backs, right? Isn't that kind of the going rate now? And maybe 2 of those guys make the roster now, every team. It's just kind of how it works, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We see, Mike, we see undrafted free agents make impacts every year. Sometimes they may make the Hall of Fame. Where does the draft start? I think is the most important question of the day. The Bears pick at 1. They're taking Caleb Williams. We already know that. That's as locked in gets. Number 2, Jane Daniels is the odds on favorite. I don't think it's as certain as the odds would tell you. Would you agree with that?
No, so that's,
I guess if there's pause, the draft starts at 2.
Yeah, there's some posturing. It's a brand new regime. They kind of seem technically oriented, right? Like real analytic driven, something I just have never been able to associate with a Washington franchise. So I don't think we should take anything for granted with Washington, including a trade. Right. I mean, if there's somebody like Minnesota or Denver trying to get up this high, or the Giants, I guess, have been rumored, Washington's not locked in here. That's not a roster ready to go win the division right now by slapping a quarterback on top of it. You know what I mean? They're in better spot than some of these other teams we'll talk about today. But you want to tell me somebody gives them a godfather offer and they say, yes, I'm in on that. So I would say it starts right about there, at least minimally, but certainly not pick number 3 is going to be the drama pick.
Yeah, but here's the thing though. If you don't have a starting quarterback and somebody's willing to give you a godfather offer, that means that quarterback is good enough to warrant that. And you've already scouted that yourself. We just don't really see that. You know, we don't see teams that need quarterbacks that end up accepting a godfather offer for a quarterback that they could have just drafted, because it's the most widely known thing in the football landscape is there's nothing more important than the quarterback. And CJ Stroud is a good example of, hey, we might not have the roster, we might not think we can win the division, but oh, oops, we just tripped into a guy who's a Pro Bowler. Changes everything.
It's a really tough out. Like, I mean, obviously that's the most obvious thing you'll hear today, right? It's really hard to figure this stuff out.
Yeah.
Is the CJ Stroud stuff the model? Is that what teams really think is possible every year? Or is Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, Josh Rose, right? You know what I mean? Because what you're saying makes sense. I don't think New England should take a quarterback at number 3. I think they should get the hell out of there and be the most boring team all weekend long, because they are not even close. They are not even close. Mac Jones may have had a chance. He may have had a chance if they had done this the right way, but he didn't. He certainly didn't. And he didn't have the personality, I don't think, either, to go along with it. So I'm not going to leave that out of it. But this Patriots roster is not close to slap a quarterback on it and it's all going to just fix itself. So I would agree with you to some degree with Washington and certainly with Chicago, who have done a lot of work. Chicago's done 2 years of really nice, boring drafting, boring free agency, and then some splashy wide receiver acquisitions as well. So they're ready. They're ready for Caleb Williams. I don't know that New England's even close. So that might be a huge surprise. I think the roster is screaming. I know how flashy a quarterback sounds right now. And, you know, we may not be back up here. That's the sentence I keep hearing, right? You're here. You got to take the guy. I don't think they're going to have trouble being back up here next year, Brendan.
No.
You know what I mean?
I think it is a different mindset for the New England Patriots than it is for the Commanders, because the Commanders, they have new ownership. They're trying to change their image. What better way to do that than to usher in the new quarterback? And they already have wide receivers that can support him. New England is, they're starting from scratch. But it's not like they have to gain the respect back from their fans. They did that over a dynasty. So it is in terms of just roster building and where they are in their franchise's history. It doesn't feel like New England, this is the year where they have to do it. But
it seems like
the consensus is there are three quarterbacks that are going to be absolute game changers. So that's what makes this tough.
I get it. And I would be just as tempted. But with that new regime in New England, and that's a big point, maybe an underreported point, the whole process has to change, right? I mean, Bill Belichick was terrible at this stuff, just absolutely brutal. And I wouldn't even leave it at just the draft. I think his free agencies, for the most part, were an absolute swing and a miss. His ability to keep players on contracts was really hit and miss, to the point of where he ended up having to trade players in the middle of the summer because the contract extension operations were going nowhere. A lot of things just really fell the right way for that franchise, including an AFC East that was just a pile of garbage for a while, right? I mean, they kind of lived off of that for quite a bit too. So that's not the case now. And if the philosophy is going to change in New England, it's going to take a couple of years for that to develop, right? I mean, how are our free agency is going to look? What's our mindset going to be in the draft? I'd like to see all of that come to the fruition and surface itself with, you know, a plan in place before they get to this quarterback point. But you're not wrong, right? If this is a generation, if Drake May's sitting there and he's a generational talent on everybody's big board, maybe he can overcompensate for a heck of a lot of things that are wrong. But to me, that team is just too bare boned outside of a couple of defensive players and maybe a lineman. Right? Because what happens at training camp? Who is he throwing to outside of Kendrick Bourne right now? It's not a good situation. So I just don't want to see a great quarterback destroy himself after 6 weeks, which we've seen now quite a bit. The hit and miss rate is not lying. It's swinging in the one direction and it's not the hit direction. Let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, the issue for New England, if they sit pat and they don't trade back, which seems like the smartest option for them, is Marvin Harrison Jr. But then you have the same problem, but the inverse is, okay, now you have a star receiver who's throwing him the ball, and you end up in a similar sort of quandary. For the record, the odds as of this recording for the 1-2-3, so they're going like Kentucky Derby style, the exacta is Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, not to any specific team, but just in that order in the draft, 1-2-3. That is -230 to be 1-2-3. So
is it really?
Yeah. -2. That is heavily juiced to be the first three picks in the draft.
Okay. All right.
It doesn't mean that it's made in the shade, but it is, it points us in a certain direction in terms of our mindset. I do think that's what happens. The question is, because we go back to the original point, where does the draft start? I think we know what's happening at one. I think we're pretty sure what's happening at two. Mm-hmm. The Commanders will take a quarterback. The question is which one. The draft, as far as chaos, starts at three, because New England could just pipe bomb this whole thing with a trade. And then who becomes, do you have a favorite in your mind of, if we end up getting that alert from Shefty, or, you know, Goodell walks up to the podium, there's been a trade. Who do you think is the team that slides up based on what you are?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I want it to be Minnesota, not just because they've already positioned themselves. They need to do right by Justin Jefferson right now. And that doesn't just mean $80 million guaranteed, right? Which is coming. That's obviously the next step here. But he's not signing that paperwork until he knows exactly what kind of player is going to be throwing him the football. And I'm not sure Sam Darnold's really elevating his his enthusiasm right now for the summer, even though that's probably a decent bridge situation right now. I'd like them to give up heaven and hell to get up there for Drake May if that's the situation. I know McCarthy's been floated around. Why are you screwing around? If Drake May is 20% better and everything on most of the big boards that we've seen says he is, don't do that. All right. Throw in the extra pick and get up to 3 for New England and get this done. So just from an organizational standpoint and for Justin Jefferson's sake and Hockenson, and really, you know, that's not a team that can just rip the Band-Aid off. You know what I mean? They're sort of stuck. They were going to be stuck even if Kirk Cousins had returned on a new contract. So I would just like them to be as aggressive as humanly possible. And I have a feeling that's probably what ends up happening here.
And they do have the draft capital to do it. Let's not forget they have pick 11 tonight and they grabbed pick 23. So they would use those two. And then if you're trying to get up to 2 or 3, you got to package something else in there. Mm-hmm. So curious to see what happens there. On the financial side, you've got Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr., two of the presumptive top 5 picks in the draft. Both have something in common outside of being immensely talented and soon to be very rich. Well, actually, no, NIL, they're already rich.
They're rich.
They're already rich. Forget that. Scrap that part. But they have no agent. So what is your thought on that? And is that going to become more prominent in the draft space?
I see a lot of people saying, no, this is just an anomaly. And I don't understand why that would be the case, right? If a nerd like me can throw in a hoodie and understand the rookie wage scale pretty easily on a year-to-year basis and where things are going, I don't understand why a couple of lawyers and maybe some, you know, previous agents who are just kind of sitting on the sideline with some contract money can't just talk these guys through the process of, look, this is where you're probably going, like, one, you know, picks 1 through 3. Here's the slotted signing bonuses. We can have those paid out X in X number of ways. We can talk about offset language, et cetera, et cetera. To me, it's not about the contract. It's about, you know, somebody covering their training costs, somebody understanding the PR side of this, somebody making sure that, you know, that we're dressed properly and that somebody's accommodating the, you know, there's a lot that goes with this, right?
Yeah.
You know, draft night and then certainly the summer leading up to workouts. Well, these guys are all doing this stuff now in college, right? This stuff's all coming to them. They've got PR people. They've got, air quoting, agents. They've got all these people already attached to them. Why would they add another iron into that fire and take 3% off their rookie contract if they don't have to? So this is just the start of this next generation of players that are already well-versed in this stuff, already have people around them. Their parents have got to be heavily involved. I believe Caleb Williams' father is the team leader on this whole non-agent situation, and rightfully so. That's probably what's happening left and right, up and down, from high school to academy to college to here. So it's not like they're alone, right? Sitting in the negotiation room, letting GMs push them around a little bit. I just think this is an easier said than done process. Now, when it comes time for 3 years later and Caleb Williams needs his $400 million extension, I'm not sure I'm there yet. All right. I do think that we should have some men and women who have been through this process before, because we've even seen just this spring a couple of extensions that have not gone well, right? Have not gone well. And, oh, by the way, you know, in baseball and other sports, there's agents that have been doing this for 40 years getting their butts kicked right now by teams. So buyer beware on veteran extensions without an agent still, even though Lamar kind of held up his own end of the bargain. But for this rookie stuff, as long as you already have a team that you trust that can hit all the check boxes, I think this is going to become a thing. I really do, because it's not that they're abandoning anything. They're just simply bringing their college group up and sticking with them for 3 years. And then when it's time to grow into a big NFL contract, then maybe they make a change. So probably just good business as long as you trust the people around you.
I imagine you talked to a few sports agents over the course of the calendar year. Are they panicking over stuff like this?
No, because this is really not a big payday for them. You know what I mean? Like the rookie contracts are kind of like the baby step thing, right? Just to get the, you want to get in the door, build the relationship, and then be there for that big contract that's coming in 3 years or 4 years, or if you're the Cowboys, 6 years, because they don't extend anybody early. So it's really just about building that relationship. There's time to do that, right? But yeah, that would be the side of it that they don't like, is that they can't take players from step A to step Z anymore. They're going to have to jump in it kind of halfway through the process and try to reel some of these players in. But I don't think that agents themselves are too concerned about, you know, losing the contract on the 123rd pick that comes with a $110,000 signing bonus.
All right, let's jump around a little bit, because there are some other teams that could get really interesting, and things in the first round could get a little squirrely tonight if these teams get active, or if they stand pat and go in a direction that would also create some waves. And I'm talking specifically about the New York Giants. They have the 6th overall pick, which is right in that sweet spot for, do you want the last of the consensus top 4 quarterbacks? J.J. McCarthy went on the Rich Eisen show and said, yeah, I've been meeting with the Giants a lot. And yet they still have the ankle weight that is Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
What do you think the Giants do tonight?
It wouldn't surprise me one iota if they do a quarterback, if it's McCarthy. In fact, it makes a heck of a lot of sense. I don't think McCarthy is week one ready. Feels kind of Will Levis-ish. That's harder to say than I thought. And
Will Levis could be like his own sort of
edge. Is that the t-shirt? That's the t-shirt, yeah. Lev-ish.
The quarterback that's good, but not
Daniel Jones is fully guaranteed. I think he's going to play the majority of the season, even though that injury guarantee for 25 scares me. It's probably the perfect situation to hand off the keys to J.J. McCarthy in 2025, and the franchise just really doesn't skip a beat. The problem is this. Shouldn't the Jets be thinking the same thing? I know Denver is aggressively thinking that. I think the Raiders are probably thinking something like this, and probably the Saints at 14 are thinking this exact same thing. And oh, by the way, probably Seattle at 16 with Geno Smith, an almost identical situation. So the reason I'm not like gung-ho about the Giants going all in on a quarterback is they don't necessarily need it this year. They could wait till next year. And there's probably 6 teams looking at that Giants spot at number 6 as a major, major way to get up and get J.J. McCarthy. So is having J.J. McCarthy better than having whatever draft asset compensation package is going to be offered to them? Because I think that's going to be coming from Denver, from Seattle, from one of these teams we're talking about here that probably just want to throw J.J. McCarthy in as a QB2 and then let him roll as a QB1 going forward. So I would like the Giants to be smarter than that. That's a former Bills organization sitting in the front office there. I don't think they take the quarterback, Brandon. I think they take the trade, and that's where things really start to get fun, because that's where Sean Payton can be aggressive and try to get all the way up for his quarterback and go from there.
It does feel like if things are active but predictable, you get a New England trade where a team like Minnesota, because they've got the most obvious draft capital, or a team like the Raiders, which is so desperate to find their future quarterback.
Yep.
They're one of those teams that moves up to 3. Arizona, I know you and I have talked about this. They need to just draft Marvin Harrison Jr. and then just kick back and relax for a minute. They need that receiver.
They've got 6 top 90 draft picks. They don't need to bulk up this year. They need the best player on the board, and that's who Marvin Harrison Jr. is. And then they can finagle as they need to after that to sort of add some depth. But it's time to give Kyler Murray a 1A++ weapon, and I think that's exactly what happens this year.
Look at the wide receivers in that. Talk about not keeping up with the Joneses. Look at the receivers just in that division.
Yeah.
DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, and Arizona has, you know, so that is a glaring need. The Chargers, you know, they get to sit there and go, okay, you know, does Jim Harbaugh get to bang the table for the top tackle on the board, or do they go Brock Bowers? They also need to help Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
But it does feel like those two teams, because of the talent they need around their quarterback, will just kind of sit where they are. And then the Giants, like you said, trade back.
Yeah.
You know, I think you can kind of create this sort of predictable narrative. And then, of course, what we'll end up with is chaos. Where you go, I never saw that coming. But the Jets one, though, is interesting that you bring that up, because
yeah,
does Aaron Rodgers not sit there and go, you got to be freaking kidding me?
Oh, he's getting over this. Yeah, he's going to be saying one thing and we're all saying the other thing, right? Because you just can't build this roster with Aaron Rodgers in mind after 2024. Why would you think that? You know what I mean? I know the contract's there. It's not guaranteed, but I wouldn't be planning in that regard. Would you?
I would be thinking about the future, but
yeah,
I don't think that's the way they're going to think. This is a Jets. This is a desperate Jets team that just went through misery last year. I think they're more concerned about this is at this moment, and really has been throughout history, a very short-sighted franchise. And this feels like a short-sighted moment in time for them, because they go, okay, well, this is the year we thought we were going to have last year. Let's make sure we continue to surround Aaron Rodgers, because Rodgers was a problem. They also lacked some talent. Like, we didn't think that, because we saw these guys on Hard Knocks, and you see these big names, and you know, Breece Hall wasn't as good, and yeah. Garrett Wilson's great, but outside of that, there wasn't a second guy. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go on the offensive side, especially in a draft where you have three receivers that could be absolute game changers.
They added Mike Williams. Don't forget, even though that's questionable. It's definitely
injury issues.
It's definitely a Brock Bowers spot. All right. And that is 100% what Aaron Rodgers is going to be looking for, unless it's one of those left tackles, which they also need, by the way, in New York. The other thing is this, and I thought you were about to go down there. The likely scenario is that this team is average, right? 9-8, 8-9, one of those two things. That's probably the most like, I haven't looked at the over unders because that's crazy. It's April.
I'm sure it's around that.
If that's the case, does Rodgers want to run it back? Will Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh have jobs? Right? The whole thing just might be completely up in the air for this.
Which is why you can't, again, you really take a quarterback if you go, yeah, that mindset of I'm trying to save my job. I'm not worried about 2025.
Yeah, Joe Douglas isn't in that mindset. He's thinking, this is my last chance to keep this job. A left tackle would be the smart move. Brock Bowers is probably the move.
Bowers, I could see them taking Roma Dunze out of Washington and just beefing up that receiving core. In terms of the draft capital, like Minnesota obviously is in the driver's seat, but do you see anybody else that you've looked at and say, if they want to get it done, they can godfather this? When we talk about that godfather offer, you know, like I'm looking at Seattle's an interesting one that you bring up, because Geno Smith's only going to take you so far.
Yeah.
Their second round pick goes to the Giants.
Right.
It looks like they don't have a second round pick. Like, once you start to thin out in those first couple of rounds, it's hard to put enough pieces together that are an attractive enough package where somebody else is taking that deal.
The Commanders have 2 seconds. I think that's notable. 36 and 40 from the Bears there. If they want to get back into the first round, the late first round, something I think is going to happen quite a bit here today. That is a team I'd be eyeing. Buffalo has this and next year's second round pick, obviously, after the Stephon Diggs trade. That's probably something that comes into play today, if not today, tomorrow for sure. And like I said, Arizona may be sitting as good as anybody in this draft right now with 6 top 90 picks, likely using number 4. So then they have 27 as well from Houston. They're powerful. That's a team that can change the course of their franchise immediately if they play their cards right over the next 2.5 days here. Yeah. And that they could be as aggressive as they want to be. They could simply make these picks and add hopefully 4 out of 6, you know, starters over the next couple of days, or they could really shake this thing up here with some nasty trade ups. So, those are kind of the teams I'm looking at right now. And by the way, and I don't know if you want to go down this route too deep, I wouldn't exclude the opportunity that some actual NFL veteran players could be included in this, right?
Like, you stole the thought right out of my mind, Mike. That is where I was headed.
I don't know so much tonight. I don't think we're going to see a first round pick move for Brandon Ayuk or T. Higgins. I really don't believe that's going to happen, because teams are smarter than that, especially with, my God, if Adunze is going to fall into 12, 13, 14, what are you doing with giving up a pick for T. Higgins or Ayuk, right?
I mean, it's just amazing. The only reason why we would even have that discussion is because of timing. because Stephon Diggs went for a future second. Why would T. Higgins go for a first round pick tonight when you still have to pay him?
That's right.
There's a contract that's in there too. So I could see them moving as a part of a package. You know, you don't usually see that, but if you see T. Higgins move tonight and there's a first round pick involved, it's not going to be straight up. There's no way.
Right. I would agree with that. I also don't think T. Higgins gets moved at all. All right. Cincinnati hasn't talked to him about a contract in like 8 months. Right. So that's not me thinking they're neglecting him. It's me thinking they're doing exactly what they did with Jesse Bates, which is, hey, man, the franchise tag's here for us to use. We're going to use it. It works out really well with Ja'Marr Chase in terms of where he is in his contract. We're going to pay him as soon as you're off the roster, unfortunately, which is after the season. And we're just going to roll with that. So he's posturing the right idea. It's draft week. Throw your name in the hat. His agent's doing the right thing so that teams at least start calling Cincinnati and annoying that bejesus out of them, right? That's probably what's happening here.
Yeah.
But there's too many available options to give up anything of real concern for a player like T. Higgins. Ayuk's a little younger. Ayuk's probably got that next level of ceiling that we haven't seen yet. He doesn't have the injury history that Higgins has to some degree. Just feels a little bit more of a safe bet for a team like Indy or Jacksonville or Buffalo to go in on Ayuk. But I don't think that happens until we get through these 32 picks and we see where, what, five or six of these wide receivers actually fall. And then if it doesn't go the right way for some of those teams I just mentioned, I would expect tomorrow morning Brandon Ayuk's name to be extremely prevalent on the rap sheets and the Schefters and the, right, those, you know, saying it without saying it, like, hey, teams are starting to really, you know, show interest in Brandon Ayuk. Yeah, right. They've been doing that for 4 months. So I wouldn't exclude the fact that at some point in time, a veteran trade is probably going to hit here because we've seen more and more of them in recent drafts.
Well, since we're on it, Cincinnati didn't have just one trade request. They had two. Trey Hendrickson, where does he fit into that mix? And also, is Cincinnati up to their old tricks? Because this kind of feels like
cheap Cincinnati. Is that what you're saying?
Cheap Cincinnati. Yeah, I was trying to find a different way to say it, but why not?
I've had coffee. I can throw it out there. Look, they sweetened the pot on Henderson a little bit last year, which I thought was a nice move. They kind of front loaded some money that he was supposed to get into 2023, which gave him a pretty nice payday. He's due $31 million over the next 2 years and $15 million this year. None of it's really guaranteed right now. So you could certainly rip this up and start over. He's 29 and a half years old, so not yet at that 30 mark. And by the way, his agent's looking at that age saying, all right, we can't let this get to 30 before the next contract, because obviously a lot of teams immediately flag that and say, well, that's going to drop things down 25% from a financial standpoint. He's not a $15 million player. He's a hell of a player. He's underrated, undervalued. I get him wanting the new contract. I don't think he wants to leave Cincinnati, but if he's reading the room, like you're alluding to here, right? And T. Higgins isn't getting his pay. Ja'Marr Chase still hasn't gotten his pay. Jesse Bates never got his pay. It seems like they're doing as little as possible to keep this thing afloat, right? Joe Mixon didn't get his pay. They had to trade Joe Mixon. There's a lot going on, and maybe we should start listening again, because maybe the Bengals think that just by paying Burrow, they've done their job, and how quickly can this team fall apart over the next, 18 months or so? Maybe something to monitor, because losing Henderson would be devastating, devastating for this team. They do not have his replacement, and that would be something they'd have to draft immediately this weekend if they believe that Henderson is not going to suit up for them, and I guess a holdout is certainly in play.
He's a game wrecker, so that would be a big blow. I hope for Burrow's sake that this isn't the case and they're just trying to allocate dollars in a smart way by saying, okay, well, Burrow got paid. We're going to pay Ja'Marr and then save money for the defense as a whole. Let's get to our quick hits to wrap up today's episode. Mostly draft, but there's some other little nuggets that are out there. Justin Fields, $25 million option, not picked up by the Pittsburgh Steelers. No surprise there, right?
No, none. We have to see how this crazy circus unfolds here before we understand anything with where the Steelers are going. I think what they're doing is great. I think it's awesome. They have two opportunities here to kind of salvage their current roster. By the way, can't believe I didn't say this. They kind of inconspicuously freed up $7 million of cap space yesterday, which took them from 12 to 19 of top 51 cap space, which is enough to acquire Brandon Ayuk. I just want that thrown out there. And this is not a team going backwards. They're at least trying to hold court with this quarterback situation. So it makes no sense to lock in more money for Justin Fields until they see where they're at. It does make sense to bolster the roster a little bit. And this is an absolute Brandon Ayuk team. At least over the next 24 hours, we'll see where things go. But that was not an accidental cap space move. Let's put it that way.
I love that fit. Brandon Ayuk playing the speedster, take the top off the defense role. George right. Pickens, the 50-50 ball guy. That's an interesting pairing. Mike McCarthy entering the final year of his deal in Dallas, and now he has hired a famous sports agent by the name of Don Yee. Is this a big deal?
Yeah, I think he's looking around at the players on his roster that are going through the exact same thing. Like, well, this thing might be gone in a year, right? the whole damn thing may blow up in a year. So yep. I might as well get my ducks in a row here. Yeah, he knows what's coming. There'll be another job waiting for him if things all kind of blow up. I get what he's doing. He knows what's going on here, and he knows that he's looking for a big fish to swim in next year.
Micah Parsons picked up they picked up his fifth year option. That also will file under not a shocker category. When is he going to get his big deal?
He should be first. He should be the first player. Yeah, it should be immediately. They're already too late on CeeDee Lamb, unfortunately. I mean, this Amon-Ra St. Brown deal is big. It's not as big as reported, and we'll talk about that another time. But it's certainly a reset situation that CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase all get to now benefit from. We'll see, man. I mean, this is a team that needs three offensive linemen. They need to pay Dak at some point in time, or they're going to have to retread the entire process with that. And, Micah took a little bit of a step back last year. I think some teams figured out how to exploit him a little bit. That doesn't mean he's not an elite player. He's still a top three defensive player in this league. I don't know why the hell you would wait on him. He should have been extended December of his third year finishing. It really should have been that quick, because this is a cornerstone defensive player. And I thought these are the kind of players that Jerry Jones has always coveted. So I don't understand why, even with this player, you're waiting to the last second.
Yeah, it feels pretty obvious. Well, since you brought it up, we'll throw that one in there. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Penei Sewell, both extended with the Detroit Lions, and they are market resetters. Is that correct?
For sure. And, you know where I have to go with the wide receiver contract. There's a $41 million hit in the final year of St. Brown's deal. So super fluffy in the last year in order to get that number over $30 million a year to become the highest average paid player. So a little bit of some posturing there structurally. However, I want to turn this positive. The first two seasons, 24 and 2025, of St. Brown and Sewell's contracts are crazy low cap hits. They use a double bonus structure to do this. In other words, they understand where the hell they are right now. This is a Lions team that wants to cook for at least two more seasons. The Jared Goff contract is probably coming later this summer. Generally speaking, we see all the boring contracts get done now. Then the quarterback contracts get done in like July, right before training camp, to make sure everybody's happy, but they stagger things out a little bit. So I wouldn't say that there's anything to read into with Goff. It's simply, let's get everything done now with the contracts we can really control cap space with. It's harder to do it with quarterback contracts, right? Because you got to front load $100 million into the first two seasons now. It's just a going rate. So they'll wait on Goff until they absolutely can hold off, probably around camp time. And then all these players are going to be locked in at what should be a 2 to 3 year window of real super fun in Detroit.
And a reminder to those out there, if your team doesn't draft the wide receiver you want in round one, don't panic. Amon-Ra St. Brown was a fourth round pick. Okay, so, and he still remembers everybody drafted in front of him. We'll wrap with this. How many snaps does Zach Wilson take at quarterback this year for the Denver Broncos? And I am not talking about practice.
Does preseason count?
No. Also, no.
Yeah, I don't know, man. None.
What if they don't? Let me rephrase this, because we don't know if they, maybe by the time you're listening to this, they drafted a quarterback, and it seems like a dumb question. If they don't draft a quarterback tonight and it's Jarrett Stidham and Zach Wilson,
yeah,
does he get run at some point in
the season? Is that the only reason to do it? Why would Denver do this? Jarrett Stidham's better than Zach Wilson. right?
Well, you would think.
Jared Stidham's better than Zach Wilson. Why would you give up any pick for a third quarterback, right? Is the only reason to do it is if you think the trade calls aren't going well and you're not going to get a guy. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I still don't understand why Denver would give up even a seventh round pick for this. A sixth round pick for this, right? That's part of the plan here. So, no, he shouldn't take any snaps. I do think he got a pretty raw deal in New York. I just also don't think he has the mindset to handle being a starting quarterback in this league. So he's a career backup. That's perfectly fine. We've seen guys absolutely flourish in that role. But Jared Stidham is too. So I'm not positive. And Jared Stidham is getting paid $6 million this year. So I'm not super positive why Zach Wilson to Denver had to happen.
Perhaps Sean Payton arrogance. He thinks he can fix them. There could be a little bit of that in there. Well, we will cap it right there. Check me out on Twitter at Brandon Kravitz for my own daily content. Also, if you need a podcast assist, audio production, or content marketing of any kind, I can be your guy. You can reach out to me across all social platforms. Hit subscribe, rate, review this podcast you're listening to right now, and check out spottrack.com for all the latest in the sports contractual world. Mike, always a pleasure. Enjoy the draft tonight.
You too, sir.